Like every day I wake up, I kind of glance out the window, and it's rain. And here's the crappy thing about it. So apparently, a couple of days it's gonna clear out, but when it clears out, it's going to get cold.
Ugh.
So this whole time that it's been muggy and rainy and wet, the one instance where the temperature actually drops, where we can actually have snow, it's gonna be like, oh no, we're done.
No, that happens actually. When the sky clears, that usually means that a high pressure zone has moved in, which means the clouds are all going to go away and it's just going to be cold on your host.
Damn it, science. Well, I mean, I can't complain. I mean, it's not like we know how to drive in the snow down here anyway, so.
Oh, you guys would be having an absolute hoot out here.
Oh, man, leave me alone. Leave us alone. We do the best we can, okay? What's up, everyone, and welcome to the final episode of 2022, that being episode 7.25 of the Stories from Nerds podcast, a show featuring a group of sci-fi and fantasy authors who not only love to discuss the latest adventures in books, TV, film, video games, and all other forms of nerd entertainment, but they also read and collaborate stories as well. And once again, I had the pleasure of being here with Abby Goldsmith.
Hello and happy holidays.
Hello, happy holidays. Scott Parkin.
Guten Abend, fröhlichen Weihnachten.
Ditto. And Eric Johnson.
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah, there we go.
Yay!
Hey, we got it all tracked. We got it all covered. But whatever the case, everyone, we wish you all a happy holiday season. And this is going to be our final Nerdy Chat episode of the year as well. But before we do that, if you've been long-time listeners, of course, you know, we always like to do a couple of updates on the authors on the panel, seeing what they've been up to on the right in front of things since our last meetup. So, Abby, Miss Wattpad Queen, how's that story of yours coming across?
Well, I mean, this time next year, our next episode, you might have to call me the Wattpad Queen and the Royal Road Queen. We'll see. Yeah, yeah. Or the Royal Road Princess, maybe.
That has a nice ring, actually.
The princess upon the royal road.
Yeah. We can work with that. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I am currently doing the submission process, and if all goes well, I'm planning to launch it on Friday.
Okay.
Yep.
Wait.
I'm Abby Babel on Royal Road, same as on Wattpad.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Noted. So you say there's an actual submission process, meaning like they review your stuff and all that?
They just make sure that it's not like elsewhere or for sale online and that sort of thing. So it actually is on Wattpad, but you just kind of have to let them know. They want to make sure you're not plagiarizing someone else's work.
Okay. That's what's up.
Which unfortunately happens a lot in those forums.
Yeah. It does, yeah.
Yeah. Totally fair. And you said that you should hear something come Friday.
Yeah, they should approve it by then. And you know, if all goes well, I wanted to launch it on a weekend, on a Friday, basically. I thought right before the holidays might be a good time. I may or may not be right about that. We'll find out.
On paper, it sounds like the right.
Logically,
idea. Yeah. Logically, it makes sense.
Yeah, like I know. My logic is that like writers are busy with their families, but readers are busy reading during that time period.
Exactly.
So readers don't stop. In fact, if anything, they actually accelerate during the holiday. So,
I would think so. I mean, I certainly love to read a lot, and if I was with a dysfunctional family, I would want to escape them.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, kids are out of school, people aren't at work and stuff, and everyone's looking for some sort of means of escape. A lot of people who are avid readers. They get a slush pool of books like from different people and everything. So yeah, I mean, it just seems like the perfect cesspool around this time of the year to, you know, do.
Cesspool? I'm not sure I'd characterize it that way, but hopefully not a cesspool.
Yeah, you just know, yeah, it's part of the cesspool. I mean, that's all it is.
Oh, no.
I mean that all in the best ways. I mean, no, I'm just saying, like, I mean, seriously, though, I mean, it's crazy to see how, like, readers just gobble up stories. Like, people will, like, read, like, a full-length novel within a day and stuff. So, people are hungry for this sort of stuff, so.
Well, I kind of love that. Like, so right now I have two new readers on Wattpad. You know what? I'm going to give them a shout-out. I'm not sure if anyone notices on this podcast, but shout-out to Nate the Late and Tainok. I really appreciate your reads and your votes. So,
thanks, guys. Yeah. Be sure to follow that support and give the good word out for it.
I appreciate it. Yeah. You know, like they're both reading probably... They're not, like, reading the entire series over the course of one day or something, because that would be insane. But I think it's been about 5 days, maybe. So, and they're both just about caught up to book 7.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yo. So from book 1. Yeah. And we're talking a 1.1 million word series. So.
Right.
Yeah.
That's dedication, man.
They are chugging right along.
Give them a signed copy.
Yeah. I did have one reader, Mike Panda, who read the entire thing in 2 days. And I was like, how is that even possible? I don't read that fast. So
nothing but reading.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, I really do. I love it when I see that. It makes me so happy.
Someone was so engaged that they read constantly for 2 days straight to get a million words into a story. That tells you something you need to know.
Exactly. I was just going to say, well, if you have something good to read, if you got the good content, then
you're doing it right. Yeah.
It goes to show. You might not be that bad at that whole writing thing, I guess.
I hope not. It's just all about getting the eyeballs on it and competing with the 10 million other people plus the AI bots.
Oh, yeah. How about that? But no, that's what's up, though. That's awesome. Well, good luck, and more likely going to be saying congrats on being the princess of. We'll figure out a name.
The Royal Herald on Royal Road.
The Regal of the Royal Road.
Yeah, there you go. The Regent of the Royal. Yeah, something like that.
The Regent.
Oh.
Okay, no, I mean, okay, never mind. She made a face, y'all.
well, it's like, you know, regent sounds a little...
Yeah, regent isn't the real thing, right? It's the stand-in. You don't want to be...
Anyway, you can come up with some crazy title for me if you... I'll leave it up to you.
We'll work on it later during our downtime. Which, by the way, everyone, just remember, this census is going to be our last episode of the year. We are going to be going on a brief hiatus ourselves, so we will be following up with you guys in a month from now, actually. So, yeah. We got a good stretch. But how about you, Scott? Your editing stuff, how's that coming?
Sadly, I have completely failed my friend Scott and have not read or edited his manuscript. I am a complete slug, and I should be soundly
whipped. He doesn't listen to the podcast by any chance, does he?
No, he's well aware that because we were going to try to publish it before Christmas, so he could give him out his Christmas gifts, and I completely botched the job. So, shame on me. I'm a bad person. In the meantime, however, I have been writing on my own novel. It's not that I wasn't doing anything with the time. I just wasn't doing that with it. No, what's funny is I've been kind of working on and off on this dragon novel
for
several years and haven't really put, I've done a lot of thought. I've done a lot of other things. Finally, I did the Save the Cat writes a novel thing and had some insights on what was missing. And I thought, oh, well, I've got all the major elements. It'll be fairly easy rewrite. I'll just, you know, a word here, a paragraph there, a snip, a tuck. Yep. We're all good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I might as well have tossed it and started over again for all the heavy rewriting I'm doing. Which is good. It's a good thing I produce a lot of words very quickly because, you know, that's not as much of a challenge for me as it might have been for somebody else.
Sure.
There you are.
Very good.
And it's a much darker story now than it was before, by the way. I was too nice to my main character. No more Mr. Nice Guy. She goes through the ringer and back again.
Doesn't that sound horrible? But I totally agree with you, though, man. That was the issue with my one character. I was like, oh, man, he's got it easy, man.
You know, and that was part of the thing is I like discovery stories. So I wrote a story wherein she discovered things. And with every discovery, she refined her already mostly successful thing to be even more successful. Mm-hmm. Yes, she had resistance, but no, she never really faced despair.
Some adversity, right?
She had some adversity, but it was relatively easily overcome. Mm-hmm. And you know, everyone was her friend. It's like, no, I've made her a social outcast. She must be socially outcast, which means all these scenes that I wrote where she was kind of liked don't work anymore. And have to replace with scenes where she's at least mistrusted or ignored because people don't dislike her, but they know that her father will not have it. Mm. So they intentionally socially isolate her, you know, not active bullying, just passive aggressive, nothing.
Yeah.
So she's alone, period.
Yep.
Which I didn't do in the first draft.
And I was about to say, and if you change that foundation to a character, that changes everything.
So now the jeopardy is different. Mm-hmm. You know, this big scene where I had everyone coming together to help her out. Well, hang on a second. They're going to come together, but it's not going to be to help her out. It's going to be to help someone else out.
Right.
Yeah. And she's the beneficiary of it. So I have to rewrite entirely the way I set that up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it's been really interesting, entertaining. I brought the dragons forward, which was one of the problems I had. It's a novel called The Eighth Dragon, wherein dragons don't appear until, you know, about 35,000 words in.
Okay. That's not that long, is it? I mean, how many words?
Out of 100,000 word novel, about 30% of the way in.
Yeah.
Now I'm talking up dragons from page 2.
Oh, okay. That's quite the leap.
Well, and I don't have dragons yet.
Yeah.
They're not going to physically appear on screen, but she talks about it.
Oh.
Now.
But I think that's good to set reader expectations.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And I set up that mystery, right, where she knows her father is angry with her. She knows her father hates the idea of dragons. She found the abandoned dragon shrine in the valley or in the wash below her father's house. The introductory short story that I open this with has that shrine still attached to his house. So we, the reader, know that this thing has occurred, which threat he made in the introduction. She doesn't know that. So this is a mystery for her to discover that we, the reader, already know, blah, 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 blah. You know, she's going to ask people questions and they're going to pretend that her mom never existed.
Okay.
Fair enough. Honestly, I think I tend to do a lot of rewriting and editing as well after rough drafts. I mean, you know, even with the best intent of intentions and a lot of planning, I still end up doing that.
You know, and the funny thing is I thought I was done. I thought I had reached a completed state. I actually put it through a class at the local university where a bunch of editors got together and worked with me for the semester. I was their project and I rewrote it to their request. And it came out shorter. It came out maybe punchier, but I'm not sure it was better.
Mm-hmm.
So now I think it's better, or it's getting better.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We'll find out soon enough because my goal is to pitch it in February. So,
okay.
Good luck.
Good luck, dude.
I mean, I say that because I've, anyway, whatever. You all know my opinions.
And I want to try to go traditional with it if I can. I'm willing to go second or third tier market.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to go straight for, you know,
the big guys.
big guys in New York, yeah. but it wouldn't hurt my feelings if I could, you know, I'm going to take my shot.
Sure,
you
always start at the top of the food chain, not the bottom. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And you work your way down. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I think I'm going to have a property here that's going to be, I think it's going to be sellable. We'll find out. And if it's not, then, you know, I'll fall into a heap of despair and vanish entirely. So
or serialize it on Royal Road or yeah, on man. Wattpad or something. I mean, you'd be surprised. There are readers on these places.
And that's the great thing about the industry. And we've talked about so much, like, they're on the podcast, that, like, the publishing houses aren't the end all, the be all when it comes to stories getting publicized and being
and
exposed
especially,
to anyone anymore.
And especially now with alternative markets, right, online and other things, you can do a legitimate hybrid career where you're doing some of this and some of that, where you've got a small press running your print publication, and then you're associated with a Royal Road or a something else, and get your EPUB out that way.
Right.
Yeah. Readers are really diverging. Like, I think if anyone who reads both traditional published books and stuff that's coming out on Royal Road, like, you can see there's a real difference. There's, like, a difference in audience, a difference in vibe, a difference in what's being marketed to readers. Like, it's a different readership.
And it is. And I don't know enough about that side of the, you know, I have not been on Wattpad. I have not done Royal Road. So I don't really know what that environment looks like or how what the interactive model is. Yeah. So I need to spend some time to find out.
Well, I think that, in some ways, you know, the young kids are on Royal Road. The old, established, dying people are in the. I'm sorry. Look, I'm closer to your age than to the kids. So.
Hey. Ah, but you're young in heart. Me.
I'm sitting right here.
I've been a geezer since I was, 17. So I've become very good at geezage.
Well, I guess all I'm saying is it's possible that what the traditional publishing industry values may not align. I don't know 100%. Maybe you are writing more for what they want. But,
you know, that's the hard part, is I still think that there is a traditional publishing market and that it's still vibrant and powerful. But yes, it is highly narrowed.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
And unfortunately, you know, either you write in a style or in a structure that they know how to sell, or you don't. And that's the hard part. That's what I'm kind of trying to learn in terms of the whole, you know, save the cat, structuring it appropriately, blah, 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 is trying to maximize my, you know, appropriateness for the publication industry as it is.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
You'll find out.
Yeah.
But well, good luck. And if
when that's done, then I'll jump into science fiction. I've got at least either a very long single book or possibly a two book set that I want to do where I explore transhumanism a little bit.
Fun. Nice. Yeah.
Segueing into my end. I'm still working on that standalone sci-fi, and standalone, but now that I've, like, gotten to the conclusion, I was like, oh, well, actually, if I really wanted to, it could go this direction, so no, I'm not.
With series potential.
It's like, no, this is it. More than done, dadgummit.
It doesn't exist.
If Abby can do it, then damn it, anyone can do it, okay? That's all.
Yeah.
She worked so hard to simplify her story concept to fit into only one book.
It was hard.
It's possible, though. Oh,
she doesn't want to do it anymore. She's going back to law.
Yeah.
She got out. You got it out of your system, right?
I did, yeah.
I tried it. I didn't like it. I'm going back.
At least able to say that, hey, I did it. It's almost like, you know, eating cottage cheese. Like, okay, I can say I did it. I don't have to worry about it anymore. That's what this is.
I still have to edit that thing. Anyway.
Hey, but you still got it from start to finish on the first trip.
Yeah.
So that's all that matters. Yeah. So, and in my case, I'm still, I think I even talked about this in the last episode, but I'm kind of in that stage where you are, Scott, where I read Save the Cat. I had all these great ideas. I was like, oh, yeah, so all I have to do is blah, 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 blah. And it was going really, really great at the very start. And I was like, oh, yeah, this where it makes sense right here. This makes sense right there. I'm doing good. And then I got to, like, the latter parts. I'm like, I wrote that. Oh my God! Why would I do that?
Well, and it's funny because the ripple effect, as you change some things up front, dude, to set some things up better, yeah, and to create more jeopardy and tension, yeah, earlier on, all of a sudden, what you wrote for the middle and ending doesn't really
work at all. It just does not fit at all. So, yeah. It's what, like you said, especially at the very beginning, you gotta get those initial foundation stages and stuff working from the get go, because I mean that's what you have at the first parts of the story. I mean, that's going to carry like the rest of it. I mean, hell, I mean, even with our like Ralph Robbins that we do, it's all about like carrying. You know, we always like start with that foundation, and then the latter two like kind of just build off of said foundation. So if we don't have anything to work with at the very beginning, or if it's a little loopy, then the whole story is going to be pretty much an absolute mess. But I mean, and I say that, and it sounds like it's all horrible and doom and gloom and everything, but I mean, I think it's fantastic that we're realizing this at the earliest stages, and like the story's only getting better because of it. And I'm enjoying the process. I'm definitely enjoying the discovery and everything.
Well, but, and you know, all of us are different as individual authors. Abby seems to get long form better than I can hope to. You
yeah.
know, just that's the way it is.
Right.
Like it, don't like it, doesn't matter. That's the way it is. I've been writing short, you know, I've published more than 50 short stories. And written, golly, 200 of them.
Yeah, I've written like 20 maybe.
Right.
Ever.
So my thing is not that I don't know how to tell a story. It's that I haven't been working in long form.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is an entirely different
dude
artistic endeavor, right, than writing short form is.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So,
you know. So even with me, again, like all of my indie published stories were epic length, that being 100+ words and stuff. So trying to do a standalone story and trying to be the traditional novel length of like 70,000-80,000 words. I mean, that's quite the challenge. But I mean, it's a great challenge, and I'm really enjoying the process of that element of discovery. So like I said, going back and just really cleaning everything up, and I was like, and I don't know about you guys, but I can't just, if I see something that doesn't work, I can't just look at the monitor and think it out. I actually have to write out like what I'm thinking in order to find the solution. So usually like I'll just start writing in the manuscript, and I'll highlight this like, okay, this is what I'm thinking. This is why this doesn't make any sense. This is why I want it to go.
I do the same thing. Yeah. It's like storyboarding basically.
Well, yeah.
My original drafts would confuse the slop out of people, because I've got all kinds of
oh yeah, right,
you know, section markers, yeah, and okay, here's some supplementary material, but I want it in line for now until I figure out what I'm doing, and then yeah, you know,
okay, so it's not this me,
yeah.
good to know. Because yeah, sometimes I have comments on the side, and then sometimes I'll have comments right in the middle of it, and I'll just highlight it just so I know for future reference when I go back to it. It's like, oh, this is just me, well, more or less thinking out loud, and we'll go back and continue. We'll revisit this section later, but right now it's full steam ahead. So
I have an entire nomenclature with capital X's, capital Y's, and capital Z's that I use to block off sections of text based on, you know, what I'm trying to accomplish,
yeah,
and the number of X's, Y's, and Z's in the beginning and end determine what in my right,
yeah,
constructive matrix, wow, what role it fills.
Wow,
it's yeah, very weird stuff, but
it works though, right? It works for you.
Don't know if it works or not. We'll see.
So we all have our lovely little unique method of madness. Right on. Well, okay, folks. Well, how about we get closer to our nerdy chat? But before we do that, how about we have some nerdy news where we offer some updates with nerd culture. You know, I usually start off with sci-fi and fantasy book recommendations, but sadly we don't have that this time because disclosure, a lot of you may not know this, but we do have some back people like in the back end who support Stories for Nerds, and the latest one, that being Mr. Justin, he has been dealing with some medical issues and stuff. So he's been in the hospital for the past couple of weeks.
Sorry to hear that.
Yep. He's doing fine. But because of that, we kind of like have been slowing down with our SFN site content. So a lot of the stuff when it comes to other nerdy news is still being actively posted and published just because like we schedule that stuff out. But when it comes to our book recommendations, we usually do that like on the month, and he started having some nasty complications like around Thanksgiving. So big shout out to Justin, and hopefully we wish for a speedy recovery where you're back to 100% and stuff. But in the meantime, we still have at least some other nerdy news. So let's get into dirt. Once I open this up, what's the first thing that we got? Yeah, I am totally ready for this, guys. Yeah. Okay, so by the time you guys get this episode, Avatar The Way of Water would be out in theaters. I don't know if it'll be out Friday. What day? Okay, no, it will be out Friday. Yeah, it'll be out Friday on the 16th. So it's been 13 years since James Cameron's Avatar revolutionized the film landscape and topped the history-making box office charts. Now the long-awaited sequel, Avatar The Way of Water, is finally about to flow into theaters. Oh, I see what you guys did there. How clever. But the sequel tells the story of the Sully family, Jake, Neytiri, and their children, as their land becomes torn apart. Per an official synopsis, the Sully family endures danger, battles to the death, and tragedy throughout the film. The couple are displaced from their home and flee into the Medcany. Oh wow, holy crap, that's a word. Medcanyonia? Ooh. Yep, sorry. Into a water world, which disrupts tribal politics. So Cameron directs the feature and produces alongside John Landau.
What's Medcanyonia? I don't know.
Yep. Mr. E, we know that you're a hardcore Avatar fan. I know, I'm calling you out. I already know what your thoughts are on this. But why don't you share what you're thinking, how you think the sequel's going to be?
Every time I see a trailer for it, I get less interested in it. I liked the first one. I thought it was fun. You know, it was an enjoyable movie. But, you know, this one, it's just... To me, it looks like, you know, they probably, it feels like they're probably going to have to kill off a main character to make, you know, you care more about the story type thing. And honestly, I don't know, just like I said, the more I see the trailer, the more I'm just like, I'm not really feeling it. So I'll reserve judgment till I see it. You know, I do plan to see it, but it's not one of those like, oh, I have to go see this, or like, oh, I can't wait to go see it. It's just right. Like, I'll probably see it just to see if it's worth seeing. And then if it's, you know, if I enjoy it, I'll probably go see the third one. If I'm just like, nah, I probably won't bother with the third one.
Fair enough. And so
the degree of anticipation that I'm not feeling for this movie is really quite impressive.
Right? You know,
I mean, I kind of don't care.
And don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the first film more or less because of the visual spectacle that.
Yes, because the story itself was really kind of paint by numbers, simplistic story.
Yes,
the presentation was stunning. The technology
presentation was absolutely spectacular, and seeing all the lengths and efforts that Cameron did in order to get this sequel running, and all the research that he did in the oceans and everything. You think I'd be more hyped for it, but I don't know. Maybe it was just since it was such a long wait that I'm just like, oh, right, yeah, Avatar. I guess I'll watch it. And that's not to say it's gonna be bad, but it's just I'm with you fellows. I'm just like, oh, okay, well, I'll go watch it. But
well, I saw the first one in the IMAX theater. Same. And it was pretty impressive.
Sorry. Yeah.
You know, as an animator, an artist and all that, I love it for the eye candy. Mm-hmm. So I think I might try to see it again in an IMAX for the eye candy. We'll see. Oh, but yeah. I guess I'm expecting very much from the story, because there's a lot of devaluing of originality going on throughout the world right now. And I've been ranting about that on various Facebook posts, but sorry. But yeah, I mean, so I expect no less from James Cameron. I mean, I'm sure that they're just phoning it in and doing story by numbers. So I guess I'll keep my expectations low, but I might go see it anyway.
Yep. Yep. And make no mistake, I mean, when I do go see it, it's more likely going to be in IMAX 3D, all the bells and whistles and stuff. But it's just like that sense of urgency, like that the anticipation, yeah. It's just not there.
This isn't the early 2000s.
Right.
This is 2023.
Yeah, man, we're done. Yeah, we got stuff to do, man. We got stuff we got to handle.
Right, it was a little bit like the first Matrix movie. There was a lot of cinematography there that was super cool the first time out.
Yeah.
But suddenly, you know, 2 years later, everyone was doing it and it wasn't exciting anymore.
Yeah.
So,
I think the whole wow factor is such a huge component to it. Because, I mean, you think of, the Matrix is an absolutely great example. But then I also think of Transformers, and that was... like Eric and I, like we grew up in that. That was our show. And so when that movie came out, like people my age, we were all clamoring for that. But then sequel after sequel is like, oh yeah, okay, there's another one.
It's funny. My husband and I, we just watched Lawnmower Man for nostalgia value. Which wow. Okay, guys, like this came out in I think 1992. It was an early 90s movie where it used 3D graphics for the first time ever. It was before Jurassic Park, before the Terminator 2.
Whoa.
And I remember at the time everyone was just kind of blown away, even though the story was ridiculous. Scott is shaking his head.
Yeah, Scott, why are you shaking your head, man?
It may have been visually great. I don't remember that part. I remember it was a really colossally dumb story.
It was dumb. It was. However, it inspired a whole generation of nerds, because it was just, you know, like everyone was like, that's virtual reality? That can be virtual reality. Whoa. You know, and in the 90s, it was like a mind blowing idea. But you're right. Now it's been done and done and done and done and done. So it's no longer even, it's just kind of silly now. You can't watch it. I think a person who never saw it before or watching it now would just be like, what on earth is this crap?
You're right.
Which is part of the problem, right? Is when you're really on the cutting edge of visual or presentation method, it's got a really short shelf life.
It does. Based on what type of effects that you use, because I will say, I go back and watch Terminator 2, and that has aged very, very well in a lot of instances.
It has, yeah.
But a lot of the effects in there were practical effects, though. Now, but if you go back and look at Jurassic Park, where they had like the practical effects, it's like, holy crap, that's amazing. But there are some instances where you can actually see that CGI really showing itself, like in the 90s. And of course, at the time when we saw that, that was absolutely mind-boggling. It was groundbreaking and stuff. But I mean, yeah,
Terminator 2 with that liquid metal guy was just so cool.
Wow.
It was unreasonable.
I still don't understand how they made it.
And it's still well done.
Yeah.
I mean, even now, that's well done animation.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say, I'll go out on a limb and I'll say that the 3D graphics for Lawnmower Man, even though by today's standards they're ludicrous, you can tell that when you really look at 1992, you know, this was well advanced compared to Tron or something. You know, like this was really, you could tell that they were really on the cutting edge. Right. I mean,
I was just going to mention Tron, because here's the thing about Tron. Even though it's really weird vector graphic, kind of, because it is what it is, it works still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I can get behind that. That's totally fair. What else do we got in other nerdy news? This has already come out, but just a friendly reminder, Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion is available on, wait a minute, I know it's, wait, what? Oh, really? Whoops. apparently it's on the Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, and the Xbox One and Xbox Series X and Series S. I was not expecting that. Oh, thanks, Square Enix. well, gamers will know to appreciate the reason why I'm kind of surprised by that. But how about, where did it go? Where did it go? My premise. Where's the, Oh, yeah. Okay. So, Final Fantasy VII Reunion follows the story of Zack Fair, a young warrior admired by the boy destined to save the world. Trusted by men, renowned as heroes of legend, and loved by the girl who holds the fate of the planet in her hands. To tell of Zack's dreams and honor the legacy that connects him to Cloud Strife is revealed in full and this grand saga that has broken the limits of an HD remaster. So Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion is actually a remaster of a game that came on the PSP or the
VR? Yeah, PSP.
Yeah. And so it's basically the sequel. I mean, I'm sorry, not the sequel. It's the prequel to Final Fantasy VII. So it tells like what Cloud, Sephiroth were doing before the events unfolded, and one of the key characters that were involved in there as well. So if you never played it, definitely be sure to check it out if that tickles your fancy. What else do we have? Oh, yes, other gaming news. If you're fans of Rick and Morty and the Solar Opposites and first-person shooter games and got an Xbox console, High on Life just recently came out. So fresh out of high school with no job and no ambition, you've really got nothing going for you until an alien cartel that wants to get high off humanity invades Earth. Now you and a team of charismatic talking guns must answer the hero's call and become the deadliest intergalactic bounty hunter the cosmos has ever seen. So rescue and join forces with a troop of mouthy guns and suit up as the galaxy's most lethal bounty hunter. Travel to various planets and locations across the cosmos, go up against the nefarious Garmentuous and his gang of goons, collect loot, meet unique characters, and more in the latest comedy adventure from Justin Roiland. And finally, in the final bit of nerdy news, Sonic fans rejoice because Sonic Prime will be coming out at the later, I think it's coming out this Saturday, if I recall correctly. But Sonic Prime pretty much follows Sonic in a high-octane adventure where the fate of a strange new multiverse rests in his gloved hands. So you'll see a lot of characters from the franchise reprise roles in here, that being, of course, Sonic the Hedgehog, Miles Tails Prior, Knuckles the Echidna, Amy Rose, Rouge the Bat, and even Shadow the Hedgehog.
Is this a show or is it a game?
It's a show.
Oh, I never heard of it.
It's coming out on Netflix.
Oh, cool.
Yep. Fun fact.
I'll have to watch it.
But whatever the case, ladies and gentlemen, if you need to stay up to date with the latest sci-fi and fantasy book recommendations, along with updates in nerd culture, be sure to check out our storiesfornerds.com website and our social media outlets, that being our Twitter page, our Facebook group, and our SFN Tales page. And be sure to subscribe to us so you can get some snazzy little exclusive prizes, including excerpts and short stories from previous featured storytellers of the past. And you can also support us financially on Patreon, and you'll get uncut episodes and our Story by Nerd segments in their entirety. So to that point, everyone, we are going to get started on our final nerdy chat of the year. So, of course, ladies first, Madam Goldsmith, what have you been up to on the nerdy front?
Well, I've been watching a Hulu show called Only Murders in the Building. And Eric, have you been watching that?
Oh, yes. I love that show.
It's a fun show. Yeah.
It is a great show.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of it.
What's it about? So it's like Steve Martin and Martin Short, are two.
Okay, I just said.
Yeah.
And Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez. And I didn't mention her first because I'm sure not as many people have heard of her.
You're talking, right?
Oh, actually, maybe. I'm sorry. I'm not into. I don't know pop culture very well, so
she's a big time singer. Like, she's okay. Probably the youth know her more than they would know Steve Martin.
So much for your non-geezer cred.
So much.
I'm sorry. Hey. Okay. Look. I might be a little bit older than people assume. Okay.
Eric and I are young, strapping young lads and everything.
I know. Well, part of it is I ignore pop culture a lot, you know, so.
Fair enough.
There's that. But anyway. Continue. Okay, well, good to know. I think she's awesome in the show. So, yeah.
What season are you on?
Two. I just started season two.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. The contrast between her and Steve Martin and Martin Short is just great. They have like a really good synergy or character contrast going on. Yeah. It's pretty funny. And they put a lot of artistry into the show. You know, it's got good music and they've got like good sequences. They get pretty creative with a lot of it.
Okay.
So they do a good job with it, you know, and the premise is honestly pretty, you wouldn't think it would be that exciting. It's a kind of weird premise. It's like they're podcasters. They run a podcast, and they're obsessed with like true crime podcasts. Oh. Which I'll say, I get it.
Yeah.
I listen to true crime podcasts. Yeah, yeah. It's a very popular genre. It is. So they're kind of making fun of that a little bit, where these people are just like, you know, they're convinced, like, somebody in the building supposedly committed suicide, and they're like, let's investigate, it's gotta be a murder, you know, and of course, you know, it is, and so, you know, and it's kind of a whodunit, you know, there's lots of, they've got Sting on the show, and, like, some other big-name celebrities, and people like that. Nathan Lane is on the show, as their neighbor, who's sketchy, and, yeah, so they're just, like, going around trying to investigate who did it.
Okay.
but it's funny. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
So I've been watching that. That's fun. And I've been watching the third season of Mythic Quest, which is that video game show.
Right.
Which I have been extremely critical of, because they really make it look like video games are mostly writers and not artists doing all of the work, right, which is bull. But aside from that, it's pretty funny. I mean, they're doing that because it's written by writers and they have no clue that actual artists work on video games. So cool, whatever.
I'm not offended at all.
But aside from that, it's pretty funny. Yeah. So, and it does kind of capture some of the mental illnesses going on in video game companies. Mm. Yeah.
And I was going to say, I mean, the fact that you're into season three of it, it's got to have something.
It does.
Yeah. Season three, they're covering virtual reality. So, you know, since my husband's into that, I'm kind of watching it just because I'm like,
Does he have any feedback or any thoughts on how they're explaining it?
He hasn't watched it.
Oh, he doesn't watch it. Okay.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I'll probably talk him into it at some point. But I mean, I can see like some of his criticisms and all that about the industry are kind of in there, you know, so they are paying attention, and the writers are definitely paying some attention to the industry.
Yeah.
They kind of have a Roblox knockoff going on in season three, which I'm like, yeah, you know, they do need to cover that. So anyway, they're doing a good job with it as far as games and game development goes.
Okay.
Yeah. except for the total inaccuracy of pretending that artists don't work in games. But okay.
Thank you. Let it be documented and known.
Thank you.
Artists are just contractors filling in the dots. Come on.
No, they are not.
Every writer knows that.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, who needs to explain that? It just magically, it just happens, right?
Isn't it funny?
Right.
What the actors say about the writers.
Yeah, I think writers are very powerful in Hollywood. They've got the WGA. And so I think a lot of actors don't dare say anything against writers. But yeah, artists just get crapped on. in any field and anywhere, artists are always the first ones to get the crap. So
yeah. This
is why, I left the art field. I no longer work as an artist in video games, and there's lots of reasons for that. Mm-hmm. And one of the main reasons is that artists do get treated like crap there. So sorry to all you artists out there. I know it's hard. Sorry. Sorry you're still in it.
We're with y'all, man. We're with y'all.
That's one
coming from a graphic designer, the struggle's real. I understand. And I appreciate y'all.
Yeah.
Woo! You know what?
I couldn't
believe what the salary of an art like a game artist was, like when I first found out what it was, or I was like, wait. Are you sure?
It's probably inflated. Whatever salary you saw on whatever like Glassdoor, it's probably like $30,000 more than it actually is.
Mm.
So just so you know.
Well, yeah, because you know what? That doesn't even account for like the smaller studios and everything, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, they're probably accounting like the one artist that gets paid well at like BioWare or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean,
Average salaries are.
Yeah. I was about to say, you know, they add up the average salary and there's a
That's how you mask the fact that you pay one superstar and the rest of them are all grunts.
Yep.
Gross. Well, any other nerdy stuff that you dabbled in?
Let's see. I mean, mostly books. You know, I guess right now I'm reading this book called Metro 2033. And it's by a Russian author. It's like translated into English.
Oh. When did it come out?
Like maybe 5 years ago or something. I'm not actually sure. Okay. But yeah, it's very it's almost like an odyssey in this post-apocalyptic subway station, like the Moscow subway station. Mm. You know, the world's gone to hell and nobody can go out above ground anymore. And so people are just trapped in the metro. And like mole people, you know.
Up, that might could be the future for the Moscow subway.
That's a little too real. That's a little
creepy. I suppose. Yeah. Well, anyway, so it's interesting. I mean, it's very dark though, so don't read it unless you're into grimdark. Yeah,
Russian.
Yes, yeah. It has that Russian feeling of like everything is crap.
Why do you have to say that?
What did you have for breakfast? Crap.
Gin, eggs, and vodka. That's all we have. You use bullets for money. That's the only money we have is bullets.
But seriously, I talk about that with TV shows, right? You get these Eastern European shows, and they are dark in a way doesn't happen elsewhere.
Yeah.
There's a really, really down vibe going on out there.
Like, do y'all need to talk, man?
Seriously. And I'm a guy who lives in the dark zone. I'm just like, that's a lot.
Like, and like, even like with certain Netflix shows that I've watched, and you could just, they just have like, it's almost like a filter, like a very, like an East European filter that you just look at, like, oh wow, this is morbid. I love it, but dang, it's morbid.
Yeah, I think it's good to like read those every once in a while, but I think, you know, certain people, if you really just love escapism, this is not light and fluffy escapism. Right. This is cold, cold and sad.
Brutality. Cold, like, is so dark. in concept as well as in detail. Right?
Is it a standalone? Is it just like the one book or is it a series?
No, it's a series. I'm not 100% sure I will continue after I finish this book. We'll see.
Okay.
But it's interesting in some ways. It's kind of philosophical. It gets into like some weird, like you're not sure if these people are seeing like visions of the future or what's going on. Like you don't really know, like there's a lot that's kind of left unsaid or unexplained. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the Odyssey, mm-hmm. you know, he's on this big journey, this big quest,
gotcha.
Running across like different societies that have very little to do with each other, that don't even, some of them don't even talk to each other. Mm. And so he's kind of like, it's a lot like an Odyssey where he's like coming at it as he's just a kid. Well, he's not a kid. He's like an 18-year-old, but he doesn't fully understand like the backstory between all of them and a lot of it's rooted in like Russian history, of course. Mm. So, you know, he doesn't fully understand like what the USSR was and so on and so forth.
Wow.
Because he was born in this apocalyptic
holy hellscape. Crap. That's totally fair.
I'm not sure much of anyone that you really mentioned, understands what the USSR was, but that's a different problem.
Right, right.
different discussion.
Yeah.
No, that sounds cool. Well, if you do finish that and pick up the next one, let us know.
Sure. Yeah.
For sure. And what about you, Mr. Park, and what have you been up to on the Nerdy Farm?
Watched the Netflix show Wednesday, which is a Addams Family reboot. Basically, we put Wednesday Addams into a boarding school, and she discovers the mystery of her parents' past and what may or may not have been a murder. And ooh, mm-hmm. I did not like this thing at all for the first two episodes because Wednesday was just a little too mean.
Oh yeah, I don't like that either.
But then they started giving her some heart and it became okay. And by the end, I was like, yeah. It's really interesting. It's a surprisingly complex approach that does a lot of misdirection. It does a lot of, it's actually a very smartly written, well acted and well presented piece. So
directed by Tim Burton.
By Tim Burton. Mm-hmm. It has a very Tim Burton feel.
It does.
So like it, don't like it. It is what it is. Okay? Yeah.
It's a Tim Burton show.
It's a Tim Burton show. Yeah. And it's got that very Tim Burton. I think every series takes a minute or two for the characters to kind of find their footing with the character. And this, for me, it was about an episode and a half that the actress playing Wednesday was trying just a little bit too hard. And then she kind of relaxed into the role. And then it became, I think, you know, some of that's writing, some of that's acting. So, you know, it's the whole thing, but I think it worked out. I think I would highly recommend it. It's a very entertaining show. Rewatched Oron High School Host Club because I just wanted to see something light, fluffy, and fun. So I did.
Fair enough.
I have a hard time with the Christmas holidays. I'm one of those people who doesn't get along with this particular holiday. And so I really, really needed a break. And then, oddly enough, I followed that up with a classic 5-year-old anime called Aiko. Are you familiar with that one?
Aiko?
It sounds very familiar.
I know of a video game called Aiko.
Possibly related with the young girl who may or may not have an artificial body and the burst, which is random biomass that attacks people outside the city.
No.
AICO.
Uh-uh. Is it an anime? Okay. It sounds like an anime.
It is an anime.
Okay.
12 episode limited. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's got its issues, but it's a lot of fun.
All right.
Just finished one called Lookism, which is a Korean anime. That's intriguing in that it's going at a social issue, which is beautiful people bullying not beautiful people. Lookism, like any other ism.
Yeah. Okay.
Bullying on the basis of look or stylishness.
That's not too far fetched, actually. But
you know, no, it is. It's a real social issue, and it's really interesting because it uses a shtick, which is the poor, downtrodden, you know, short, fat, ugly, and poor boy who's just tired of being bullied by athletic and beautiful people. Mm-hmm. That he begs his mom to let him go to another school. He does, goes to sleep, wakes up, and he's in a beautiful body now.
Oh.
So there's a little bit of the body swap thing mm-hmm. going, and both bodies exist, but only one is active at a time. So he's switching back and forth and experiencing the same situations and people from both sides of the lookish fence.
Okay.
And it's intriguing, and it's very much a message-based story, and yeah. I liked it more than I expected to.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Because it's so aggressively message-oriented, right? It's a social improvement screed, as it were.
Right.
But it still manages to be entertaining, okay. even though it's very predictable where it goes, what it does. You can see it all coming, and still somehow I got to the end, and I shed a single tear and was happy with it.
Hey, at the end of the day.
You know. So, yeah, you know, it's really intriguing because there's kind of an existential question working. Well, existential, I don't know what, there's some sort of baseline question working there that when we attempt to project into something that we don't really understand, we may feel like we understand it or some degree of it. So what happens is you get a not quite ugly person who, having been picked on once for not being beautiful, thinks they know what it's like to be a dreg, and they're wrong.
Right.
So they attempt to ally for the downtrodden and miss a lot of the details. So, you know, it's always a hard question because in the end, for me, this show ended up suggesting basically that the only way for the non-beautiful to be accepted in society is with the assistance and indulgence of a beautiful person. Which I think is really kind of counterproductive to the core message that you think you're delivering. Mm-hmm. And that mismatch kept kind of hitting me as I watched it. So it was really intriguing. If nothing else, it was useful as a trigger for an introspective, deconstructive, philosophically shredding moment. So anyway, and I probably watched some other things, but I'm not coming up with them off the top of my head. So that will have to do for now.
All right. Well, what about you, E? What have you been up to since the last time that we had a nerd chat?
Let's see. I've been able to start playing Pokemon Violet. I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. I think they took some of the best aspects of Akouras, which, you know, was hit or miss for some people because it was trying something brand new. I think they took some of the best aspects of that and combined it with Sword and Shield and kind of made this nice game, which I know a lot of people have been, you know, criticizing for glitching and for, you know, having frame rate issues and stuff like that. But I've enjoyed it. I think it's a fun game so far. I'm enjoying it a lot.
What's the story behind it?
It's Pokemon. Okay. You basically show up at a you show up at a school. You show up at a school, and they basically say, "I actually do kind of like the message they do there." You show up at the school, and like the assignment mm-hmm. you're given is to go find your treasure, which is basically is it an experience? Is it a friend? Is it like a battle you won? Is it something, you know? What is something that you classify as your own personal treasure?
Personalized treasure.
Yeah. So that's like your mission you have to do in the game. And so you get invited by three people to go do these different things that say, hey, if you do this, this is worthy of a treasure. And it's kind of, so it's like each of them has their own specific, what is their treasure? And you're helping them fulfill it while trying to find your own type thing.
Oh.
So it's very sweet. Yeah. So it is a pretty interesting, like I said, it is interesting in that sense. And I like that idea, that, like, you know, instead of just going on this classic Pokemon journey of, hey, let's go collect these gym badges, like, no, you're actually kind of, you're trying to find what is it that inspires you? What is it that you personally find rewarding? Right. So, like I said, so I'm enjoying it a lot so far for that aspect. Then I've, you know, of course, been playing Final Fantasy 14 still. Love it. You know, keep finding new things I haven't done before and been enjoying it. I've also been playing, I got back into Baldur's Gate 3 some, been playing that some more, which is a, you know, very fun game, very much Dungeons and Dragons. It can be very brutal or can be, you know, very rewarding. So it's a frustrating but fun game. Then I watched the Netflix movie Slumberland, starring Jason Momoa, I think his name is, Aquaman.
Yeah.
I will say that movie has a lot of heart. It is a very cute movie. It starts off kind of silly, but by the end of it, you're kind of like, I'm not crying. No, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not crying. Cause like, so the premise kind of behind it is that this little girl basically has been growing up on this island, with her dad who runs a watchtower, runs a lighthouse, and she's been homeschooled by him. And he tells her all these stories, about his best friend named Flick. And one night he gets a call to go out, you know, to help a ship in distress during a storm, doesn't return. So the little girl basically wants to escape to her dreams where, you know, she finds Flick. Who's like an imaginary character who's real, like, you know, like, you know, she talks to him, finds things, realizes that they're both connected. And she, you know, wants to stay in the imaginary world because she goes, hey, I'm trying to find this pearl that will grant any wish you want. And, cause I said, your dad, like the last story he told her was about him going down into this darkness where all these pearls were. And she goes, your dad, you know, he and I were going to go into this, you know, get these pearls. And her wish is she wants to get the pearl to live in the dreamland forever so she can stay with her dad. So it's kind of like a journey of her trying to find out if that's truly what she wants to wish for. So it's, you know, and it's a really fun story. Jason Moore does such a good job. He has such good chemistry with the younger girl. Like, they just had so much. You can tell that they probably had a lot of fun doing the movie. You know, it's goofy at a lot of points. There's a lot of silly things, but by the end of it, you start going, that actually had a lot of heart.
All right. Which is something I've noticed about Jason Momoa. He actually has a really interesting kind of heartfelt side to him that isn't always evident.
Yeah.
He's capable. He can act that part really well.
Yeah.
It's
in him. Yeah. Yeah. No, so he does a great job because, like, his character is supposed to be kind of this goofy, I want to be free, do whatever I want type thing, but has some complexity in there as well. So he pulls it off really well. And like I said, the girl, I think, also really helps push in that, because he's supposed to be like this childlike wonder of, like, I'm going to go on adventures. I'm going to see all these amazing sights. I'm never going to stop. Like, almost like a Peter Pan type quality.
Right.
And so it's a lot of, like I said, it's a lot of fun. And it's like, I said, all the cast is really good. Like, cause, you know, you have the waking world, which is going on, stuff going on there. And, you know, the cast there is really good. Cause like, she's living with her uncle, who's kind of like a shut in who, as he puts it, he never wanted to be responsible for anybody, but you like feel for him cause he's trying so hard to try to connect to his brother's daughter who, you know, it's his brother's daughter. He wants to be there for her. And, you know, so you could, it's like, so it's really heartfelt cause you can see that he's really trying to connect to her. You know, and he's struggling, you know, the struggle, you're like, man, I can feel that, you know, just trying, you know, he's trying everything he can, and she's not interested because she wants to live in this dream world with her dad. So like I said, it's really, really good story. I recommend it just because it's a good watch. It's a good fun watch, has good heart, good Christmas, kind of good family movie to watch. Other than that, you know, watching, the Gundam, Witch from Mercury, which is still been really good. You know, it's a Gundam series. I love Gundam, so they've been hitting all the right keys for it. Been watching Titans, which unfortunately is probably going to be its last season because of, you know, DC and the Warner Brothers merger. And it's one of those shows that has always been a fun show I've liked watching because One Nightwing is one of my absolute favorite DC characters. And the guy they got playing him does such a good job playing Dick Grayson and Nightwing. And you know, it's a really fun show. I'm going to be sad to see when it ends. You know, fingers crossed that someone decide, you know, I've heard rumors. I think that Amazon is starting to pick up some DC shows.
A lot of HBO Max shows are being
shipped out. Yeah, being shopped out. So my fingers are kind of crossed that Amazon might decide to pick it up. Just because, you know, like I said, it's a fun show. I enjoy it. And you know, it's nice to see some of the characters. I mean, I would argue probably a lot of these characters are well known now, just because Titans is kind of a popular comic book, and you had the Teen Titans show and all that. So I would say that these characters are probably pretty popular. So you know, but it's still nice to see live action versions of them. You rarely ever see live action versions of them, other than Cyborg, mm-hmm. is the only one you've seen more recently.
Right.
So you know, so it's nice to see that. I'm trying to think. I've probably seen a movie. I'm just blanking on if I have or haven't. Books. I know I did read one book, a Star Wars book called Master and Apprentice, which covers. I might have mentioned it last time. I don't remember. It covers it's about Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi in their early stages. Of their Padawan thing, where it kind of helps explain Qui-Gon's why he starts believing the prophecy so much for the for Anakin, you know, like the prophecy of the Chosen One, and it kind of helps dig a little more into Dooku's mindset of what's going on, because you find out that Dooku actually had another apprentice before Qui-Gon, and that's who Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan have to go help, and there's some tension between them because the Council has offered Qui-Gon a seat. And Qui-Gon never told Obi-Wan that, hey, because they kind of show in the beginning, they've been having issues melding together. Like, you know, Qui-Gon does things his own way. Obi-Wan is more like, you know, Qui-Gon's more that free spirit, kind of goes by what he believes the moment is. While Obi-Wan's more, their rules, their guides, we're supposed to be following.
He's them. The ideal Jedi of the time.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I like the book. I thought it was very enjoyable. I thought it did a good job of building up kind of the relationship between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and kind of expanding more of what's there. So other than that, like I said, I probably saw a movie in theater, but I'm honestly blanking if I did or didn't. I can't really remember. There's been a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, good. Plenty of content, so it seems. I'm going to backtrack with one of the things that Scott mentioned. I also watched Wednesday. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I binged it in 2 days, and then my brother we watched this like during Thanksgiving, and my brother, he kind of just came in the middle portion of me watching that. I was like maybe 4 episodes in, and he sat down and started watching. I was like, I'm like halfway through, don't you want to watch the rest? I was like, no, I'm good. And I was like, oh, okay. but yeah, pretty much just piggybacking off of everything that Scott was saying, it's just done so well, and like the overall premise of it, it was oddly heartwarming. For an Addams Family show, you know? I think that's the only way I can describe it. Because, you know, everyone knows the Addams Family. Everyone knows, like, everyone's, like, corpse and everything. And especially when it comes to Wednesday. Wednesday is very... She has some sociopathic tendencies. Like, she says things not meaning for them to be... like harsh or cruel. She just doesn't have that thing that a lot of humans have called read the room. She'll just say whatever on her mind, and like I said, she doesn't mean anything by it. She's just like, well, this is how I feel, and well,
a legitimate sociopath in the sense that she does not understand what normal people understand.
Right.
She just doesn't.
Yeah, she just doesn't. No fault of hers. That's just
not an evil person. Just
not an evil person. Not
connected to the same world that we are.
Yep.
Here's a question I have for you too, because I know you, Raph, and I, you've talked about this. We talked about this some. I know there's been a lot of criticism. I'm not a sociopath,
if that's what you're about to bring up.
No. there's been a lot of criticism about the casting of Gomez and Morticia.
Oh, yes.
What do you guys think about
that? Oh, yeah. Good question. You know what? I loved Catherine Zeta-Jones, Morticia. I thought she was absolutely, I thought for me, I thought she was great. I apologize, I can't think of the guy's name. Who
Luis was, Guzman.
What was his name?
Luis Guzman.
Luis Guzman, thank you. Okay. I wasn't on that side of the field where like everyone was getting all gripey because of how he looked, because it was like, well, actually that's how Gomez Adam looked in the cartoon and stuff. So all you people griping that Gomez, he doesn't look like Raul Julia. Well, yeah. Raul Julia was kind of the exception to the rule. That's what Gomez Adam liked to look like. That being said, I thought he was fine in the show. But where I could see Catherine Zeta-Jones like really having more, and mind you, everyone who hasn't watched this, Morticia and Gomez, they're more like cameos and guest appearances. The show's really all about Wednesday. So if I could see Catherine Zeta-Jones, Morticia, like actually, if they did make an actual Addams Family series, I could see her like just doing that throughout the whole series. Whereas the gold,
Luis Guzman,
yeah, him, he was fine for the increments that he was in, but I don't know if he could carry a whole show. So he was in, spoiler alert, he was in what, maybe two or three episodes, and the time that he was in there, it was fine. But had it been more screen time, I might not have been like, I might have felt he may have overstayed his welcome, in my opinion.
I can see why people, because who was it? John Astin, what was his name? The guy who played the black and white TV show way back.
I'm not too sure.
Sean Astin, yeah. That was his name, Sean Astin.
I know most people are, when they think of Gomez, they think of Raul Julia from the 90s film.
Okay. Adams Family, yeah. Absolutely Values, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the 60s TV
right,
show.
Right. Oh, yeah, no. Show. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Geezer. anyway.
For what it's worth, I watched those two.
I didn't have nearly as much of a problem with that. I mean, he wasn't what I was expecting, right? He was more, I don't know, just more than I expected. Having said that, I bought into it fairly quickly and didn't have a problem with it.
Okay.
So I didn't, you know, and I've been an Addams Family fan for years, including the comics,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
The pre TV show. I thought it was fine. I thought it was decent casting. I thought actually all around they did a really nice job with casting and presentation. Even if it was not quite the familiar version that he was shorter, he was dumpier, he was more earthy, yeah. Accustomed to seeing in that character,
yeah,
who has always been portrayed as a little bit slicker, a little bit more, you know,
charismatic,
cosmopolitan, charismatic.
Yeah.
And here he was a creature of his passions, period.
Mm-hmm. Period. Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because it actually, for me, kind of expanded the character a little bit and made the whole interaction a little bit more interesting, especially when we get into the murder mystery.
Yeah.
Now, brief caveat for anyone who has not yet seen this.
Spoilers.
The body count is surprisingly high.
Yeah.
A fairly substantial number of named characters do not survive to the end of the series. Be ready for it.
Yeah, and for that premise, it's basically a mystery. It's a mystery. It's a whodunit.
It's a combination murder mystery. Well, extended, right, ongoing serial killer mystery, and yeah, also the right original sin,
mm-hmm,
that Gomez Meredith may not have committed.
Yeah.
So yeah, because my personal thought was that, If the series is called Addams Families instead of Wednesday, I don't think I would have picked Luis Guzman to lead for Gomez, because people would have tried going for him. But the fact that it was Wednesday, I thought that Luis Guzman played off well, because I was telling someone, I said, you know, most of the time, whenever you think of the Addams Family, Gomez comes to your mind. He's usually the lead character, him and Fester, Wednesday's in there. But my line usually goes to Gomez and Fester whenever someone says Addams Family.
Sure.
It was usually first two. Yeah.
And
so I was like, So I was saying that. So the fact that I think you got those characters, I think that helped push Wednesday forward. Because I think if you really got a strong Gomez, it would be hard for Wednesday to compete with that. Because you need Wednesday to be able to stand up and be, because you don't want to steal. Yes. Like, that's why I love Luis Gomez. I thought he did a good job of helping support and push Wednesday as that lead actress, whereas some people were recommending Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, if you got Johnny Depp, he would steal the scenes anytime Wednesday was in there. Totally fair.
Yes.
And you then have people saying, hey, why don't we have more Gomez in this show? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why I was like, if this was called Addams Family, I would not see Luis Guzman leading. The fact that it's about Wednesday, I think Luis Guzman does such a good job of helping push. I'm sorry, I blank on her name.
Ortega.
Jenna Ortega. That Luis Guzman does such a good job pushing Jenna Ortega to be that Wednesday, and he does such a good job supporting her instead of taking the scene from her. He does such a good job pushing her and supporting that scene with her. Mm-hmm.
And I think that absolutely dead on nails.
Yeah.
That's the key. That's
totally fair.
Wednesday's story.
Yep.
And everything is focused to Wednesday. And every other character is there in order to reveal Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of the Big Bad.
Yeah.
But anyway. And the sheriff, who's a dip squat who deserves to get punched. even the secondary characters, right? Yes, Thing had a outsized role, but Fester was not an overwhelmingly intrusive character. He was clever comic relief, which is what he was in the original series. And then he got a little bit more right. That was where having Christopher Lee play him in the
Christopher Lloyd
Family Values
thing. Yeah.
He actually almost was too much for the character.
Yeah.
That didn't happen here.
Yeah. Right. Because I remember like around that time, Scott, like there was another Addams Family animated series that came out a little after that. And when they showed Fester, he was more like the Fester that you're more likely probably familiar with. And the one that was kind of portrayed in the Wednesday show, he was just like, well, crazy. A little crazy. I mean, totally endearing. Don't get me wrong. But like you said, like Christopher Lloyd's Fester, he was really kind of a little more grounded, if that makes any sense. Whereas the other Fester is like, oh yeah, you definitely fit in with the Addams Family mechanic, if that makes any sense.
I wouldn't mind seeing Tim Burton go ahead and take on the whole family and spotlight each one of them and try to give us the whole story. Because frankly, I think he did a nice job here. The writing was good.
Yeah, they announced a season two, and I wouldn't mind them dabbling and exploring a little more, bringing in the family a little more, because at least the way that he did it in season one, I think he understands like the great balance that to be had between those, like, we'll make sure this is a show about Wednesday, but
and I know that. Yeah,
you know,
I know they won't do it, but it wouldn't hurt my feelings to see a season about Morticia, a season about Pugsley, a season about Gomez. It would be really intriguing to see how you present those and make each of them focus characters with the others then falling into that supporting role. Now, the actors would never go for it. It's, it's once you've headlined you.
Yeah. But I wouldn't mind seeing that myself, though. What else was there? I also watched the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special. Yeah. Pleasantly surprised, actually.
That was so good.
It was so fun. Very, very good. And the reason why I was pleasantly surprised is usually when it comes to holiday specials,
doesn't exist.
Usually don't work out that well for some reason. So when they announced this special, I was like, okay, well, let's kind of temper your expectations extremely low. But it worked. They actually did it really well. And it was a Guardians of the Galaxy episode, more or less. And it was a quick little short story about, aliens.
45 minutes.
Yeah. Give or take. And the story that they told was done very nice. It was like it was a bit of a musical as well, and the music, well, it's Guardians of the Galaxy, so enough said. The music was great, and it just had an endearing like story at the end, and so endearing that I actually had to follow up with Eric and be like, "Yo, this was sweet, but hey, is this legit? Is this actually something? Is this canon? Is this Marvel canon?" Which he later did confirm, but I won't spoil it for you if you haven't watched that yet. But it was a fun show. It was a fun little episode. What else did I do? I also watched Into the Woods. That came and I'm really, really late on that. It came out years ago. It was an all-star cast. It has Emily Blunt, Chris Pine,
Anna Kendrick,
and I'm thinking of James Corden. I think that's
yes, James Corden's, yes.
Yeah. But I wanted to watch it because I saw the play It was originally a musical play, and it was broadcast on PBS years ago. I mean, I was in elementary school, and I remember watching this play, and when I saw the premise of this, I was like, wait a minute. And at the time, like when I was a little boy, I didn't know what the name of the play was called, but when I heard the premise of this, I was like, wait a minute, is this that play that my brother and I watched when we were kids? And sadly, my brother, he watched the movie with me, and I was like, yeah, don't you remember this? Like, this was great. And mind you, my brother is 2 years older than me, so I expected him to actually remember this more than I did, and he had no recollection of it. Because, like, even, like, when, one of the key songs came in, I was like, yeah, and here's the song, and I kind of, like, did the tune of the song. He had no recollection of it, so, yeah. But for what it's worth, I enjoyed it just as much as I did the play. But that was on Disney Plus when I watched it, so thumbs up on that. Gaming wise, still playing freaking Phantasy Star Online 2 New Genesis. They had a new DLC that came out a couple of months ago. A couple of days ago. It actually came out last week. And I've talked to Eric about this story before, and like the previous DLC, the story was very, very meh. And I think that was like the general consistency of it. And this latest DLC, it picks up again. Like, you actually really appreciate what is at stake. And like the people are on this planet, they're fighting these mechanics. They call them dolls. And like the main one is Dark Falls, and they're pretty much terrorizing the city, and a lot of these regions across the planet are working together in order to defeat this. And this latest DLC really showed like the cost and the price of war. And so it's not as sugarcoaty as like the last one was. Like it has a similar kind of dark tone as like the previous one, because like, well, people are really on their like it's a dire situation, and you could tell that the situation was really dire based on the premise that they had in this latest DLC. So really enjoyed that, but now it's all about getting back into the grind and stuff, and I'm doing that. They at a new region, and there's new armor and new weapons to upgrade and stuff. So that's probably going to keep me occupied during my vacation. And yeah. Oh, and then speaking of High on Life, that's in my cube downloading right now. And so I'll probably be checking that out sometime during Christmas break as well. But yeah, that's pretty much everything that I got going on. So that's going to conclude our nerdy chat episode. So, whatever the case, guys, if you like these episodes, whether those are our Story by Nerd segments or our Nerdy Chat episodes, be sure to give us a like, heart, thumbs up, stars, whatever source the podcast that is, where that's iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, etc., etc. Yeah, you get the idea. But folks, happy holidays, happy New Year's. We will see you in a couple of weeks, but you guys take care of each other. But I'm Rafael Jordan. This is a wrap for this season of the Stories for Nerds podcast. Y'all keep thinking big on a collective level. This is Scott, Abby, and Eric signing off. Scott, what is going to be that final send-off to our listeners for the year?
Be good to your Amazon driver. It's been a tough year.
Priorities, right?
You know, seriously, people are so rude.